Are you ready, all you fans out there in out there land? I say it's time again. Have mercy, let the congregation say, hey, man. It's time for the biggest, baddest party in the world. So get on up, turn it up a notch, and get ready to boogie, baby. Ow!
From Tomahawk to Rhinelander, from Anago to Eagle River, and everywhere in between, it's time for the Sports Q on WJJQ. Now, here is your host, Alex Cook.
And welcome to WJJQ Sports Q. Yes, that's right. This is not Alex Cook. This is Amy Mackey. Alex is a little ill today, so I offered to slip in and give my worldly knowledge of everything in sports today, along with my three lovely, illustrious guests. John Long.
Yes.
Absolutely. Matt Tyler and Keith Hansey, welcome this evening, gentlemen.
Oh, good to be here.
We already like you better than Alex.
Yeah, this has already gone way better. Way better.
Got an exciting show today. We got Hunter Baumgard coming up from Fox Sports Wisconsin. He's going to talk Brewers opening day. Also, Hatchet softball coach John Larson, he's going to join the show a little later to talk about girls softball this season. Little conversation about Giannis shutdown. Is that what we're going to do? Is that what they should do, right?
I don't know if he will.
Yeah, right? But first off, boys, let's cover madness. As in March Madness, we're down to the Sweet 16. Badgers, first weekend recap. Do we even want to cover that?
We got to talk a little bit about it.
Not much.
Yeah, if somebody was...
A little bit. Let's talk about the first, I don't know, 55 minutes.
Well, that 1-for-10 in the first on threes, like that's just not right. That's not right at all. And if you're living under the rock, the number 5 seed Wisconsin lost in round 64 to the number 12 seed High Point, 83-82. Why do we lose?
Matt, you know, it's uncanny, and I can't tell you how many years back you go that a 12 seed has beaten a 5 seed in the NCAA tournament. And last 2 years, two of the last three, Wisconsin has been that 5 seed that has lost. I just don't understand it. I don't understand how you can go into Michigan and beat Michigan. You can go into Illinois and beat Illinois. You can beat Purdue. You beat the best teams in the country, and you can't somehow beat this year High Point, last year McNeese State. JMU, I think, got us in the last couple years. And I'm a Greg Gard fan. I've been a supporter. But if they replace him, I'm okay. I'm okay at this point.
And you're not here, but you're not here to have good regular seasons, right? I mean, it's no matter what, when you're talking about Division I college sports, the goal ultimately is to win your way towards the championship. And unfortunately, we just keep butting our head against the same ceiling. I mean, I said this in the Big Ten tournament, and they had a really nice run in the Big Ten tournament. Took Michigan, you know, right to the finish. And I said, I think I was talking to Dave at the time, I said, I hope that we didn't just play our way into a 5 seed, because this is what I was worried about. And I think, I don't know if it was Alex or somebody else, said, hey, you know, Wisconsin as a 5 seed has lost in the tournament like 8 times. So, I mean, just Wisconsin, let alone, like we've talked about, there's always seems to be that 5-12 upset. And when the seedings came out and Wisconsin had a 5, I was like, I do not like this. And right away, I think it was Clark Kellogg goes, I like High Point in this matchup. And everyone kind of chuckled, and I thought, oh, man, I do not like the way this is lining up. And then as soon as that kid, I think Mason, stepped across half court and shot a 45-foot three-pointer, like with under 3 minutes to go. I mean, it was a horrible shot selection, and he drained it. I said, we're in trouble.
Yeah, they gained all the momentum right there.
Oh, my goodness.
And you know, looking at the 5-12 matchups, we played a couple 12 teams that shouldn't have been 12.
Yeah, absolutely.
12s.
Absolutely.
But this year, I think it was right. High Point was a 12 seed.
Yeah, they were legit 12.
And I don't know if it's gets in the Badgers' head, possibly, you know, losing as a 5 seed. But once they made that shot, High Point got all the momentum.
I mean, I'll give High Point credit.
Yes.
That last 3 minutes, they were unconscious. Yeah. At one point, that speedy point guard tried to draw a foul on a three-pointer and literally just chucked it up. And it didn't even look like a shot, and it went in.
Wasn't trying to make it. He was trying to
get to the line, right. Stop the clock, right, and burn some free throws, and made it. And I mean, and it was just like, come on. It just, you could just feel it slipping away.
Here's the part. This is a different Wisconsin team than it was 3 or 4 years ago because they're up-tempo now. Old Wisconsin probably would have beat High Point because they would have made that a very ugly game. Sure. This Wisconsin team, that was an ultimate great matchup for High Point.
It was.
It was a perfect matchup.
It really was, and this was said, Keith. I know you and I talked about this. This Wisconsin team could beat anybody in the country, and they could lose to anybody in the country in any given night. And unfortunately, that's what we saw.
Now, High Point really played Arkansas tough, though.
Oh, very
good. I mean, good squad.
They had them on the ropes for a bit.
Yeah.
But when you're looking at the Badgers, like, whose responsibility do you put it at a college level? that last 3 minutes. Let's talk about that last 3 minutes. You had a cherry picker point.
You did.
That was
the game-winning bucket.
Just plain out, give up, no hustle. Is that the player and their type of a commitment, or is that the coach who just is not getting their players to play the game to the end?
Well, they change players on a yearly basis, so who's the common denominator in this?
Right. Thank you.
Right?
And here's the stat. The guy that made the winning basket, that was his only two-point basket of the year.
Crazy, right?
That was the only two-point basket he made of the year.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's true. True story.
Yeah.
Staggering.
What's the answer for next year? You're saying coach got to go.
I foresee that. I do.
I don't know. That's not really.
If you're okay with mediocrity, if you're okay with the Badgers always finishing somewhere between third and fifth in the Big Ten, and he made the Sweet 16 twice with Bo Ryan's players.
Right.
Since then, he's not only not made the Sweet 16, they missed the tournament once or twice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
recruiting talent?
He came in.
Do you think the talent's there?
Well, I mean, he's did a nice job with
players.
He's done a good NIL job.
Yeah.
I think the last 2 years they've overperformed what they've, you know, projected for him in the beginning of the season. So that way I think he's doing good. But he also took over at the time that the NIL and the transfer portal is exploding.
Yeah.
So you're not going to have teams like Bo Ryan always, you know, had a core group and they stayed for 3-4 years.
Right. That's a different game. That's
gone.
Yeah. Now, I saw the lawmakers passed a new law that will generate revenue for NIL in the state of Wisconsin. Did you see that? And I think it passed by
that.
One vote.
Yes.
Yeah, I did see that.
So there's an extra $15 million coming to UW, or $25 million, something like that.
I did see that.
Maybe that'll make a difference. I know a majority of that's probably going to go to football because football is more of a revenue-generating sport than basketball is. But
well, I don't know. The Kohl Center had a lot of sellouts this season. And, you know, they had more points over – or more games over 90 points than ever in school history. I think they broke the single-season record for threes in a season. So there was some exciting offensive play happening.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you, John. It's just like, for instance, Kentucky. It's a basketball school, right?
Yeah, right.
Football gains more money in Kentucky than basketball does, if you can believe that.
Yeah.
Football is just naturally a more revenue-generating sport.
Right. The stadium holds more people.
Yeah.
So it's a numbers game. But I do think that – I think Greg Gard will probably get another year. Do I agree with it? Not necessarily. But, you know, he picked up Nick Boyd in the transfer portal. He obviously –
he's done well there.
He's a stud player. You know, he's going to move on. But you know, I think they're going to end up giving him another year and seeing what happens. I do think that, you know, you can't just keep – expecting the different results when you have got the same guy in there and we just keep hitting our head on the same ceiling.
Yeah, and I think if they do make a decision, it's going to be quickly because in today's age with the transfer portal and all that, if somebody thinks that's a lame duck coach out there, they're probably not going to look at Wisconsin. So they're going to have to make a decision quickly so he can either start recruiting or they can start getting a new coach right away before this tournament's even done.
Sure.
And so they can get players in.
Yeah,
it'll be interesting.
I think there'll be a mix-up, a big mix-up with college basketball coaches with the current news.
Yeah.
You know, looking at Kentucky, you know, maybe moving on and whatnot. So, yeah, I think it's going to definitely make a difference. But let's talk about the Sweet 16. Let's start out with Duke and St. John's.
I got a stat for you.
Oh,
every time Duke has won a national championship, they have beat St. John's. Somewhere in the tournament, they beat St. John's every year they've won the national championship.
Huh. Interesting.
And I have Duke going past St. John's. This one?
I do as well.
Yes.
Yeah, I would.
That's because you looked at my bracket, John.
I think the big thing with Duke, they got back Patrick Gumba, who's a 7-foot center, played a little bit in the second game, I think. So he's going to have a full week of practice under his belt. I think that's a big difference maker. I would pick Duke also.
I'm going to go with I have to stick with Duke myself. You just have to, right? St. John, second most efficient team in college basketball, though, so it makes it tough. I think it's going to be a tough game. I don't think they're going to make it easy for them at all. All right, moving on. Houston, they're a 2 seed against a 3 seed Illinois. That's Tuesday night game at 9:05.
That might be the best game of the Sweet 16.
I actually
think that's
going to
be a tough game.
I think it's going to be a heck of a game. Honestly, Illinois is tough. I mean, they have such a complete lineup. Their bigs are super athletic. Their guards can play. Obviously, we know what Houston can do. To me, you look at Houston's got a fantastic defense like they always do against a really high-powered offense by Illinois. This should be a really good game.
Yeah, two really good freshmen, one on each team running the point, too.
Yep.
I like Houston because of their defense. I'm going to take Houston.
Yeah, I've got Houston also.
Houston defense.
I'm going to take
defense
Illinois.
Wins games.
I'm taking Illinois.
John staying with the Big Ten.
They got a little chip on their shoulder. I don't know, something about them.
Defense wins games, coach.
Football.
All right, number 1 seed Arizona against number 4 seed Arkansas. What are you thinking?
That point
guard. It's going to be a big guard matchup there. Yep.
The point guard for Arkansas, the freshman Acuff, is really, really good.
He took the high point game over.
He did. He did. I don't know if he's got enough around him, but...
he does not. Arizona's going to win this going away, I think.
Okay, then I'm going to go Arkansas.
Arizona, I'll take your money.
I got Arizona.
I'm only going Arkansas because I've got them left in our work pool.
He's hanging on for dear life.
Yeah.
So if Malik Thomas has a great game, it's Arkansas all the way. Jaden Bradley has a great game, it's Arizona all the way. I think Malik has something to prove. That whole chip on the shoulder thing, so I'm going to go with Arkansas.
Okay.
Go with Arkansas. All right, number 2 seed UConn versus number 3 seed Michigan State. What are we thinking, Keith?
I think UConn, just simply by the way they've been playing. I think they got the advantage over Michigan State.
I love their coach. He's such a crazy guy.
That's two crazy coaches.
It is two crazy
ultimately
coaches
on there, but I think UConn's a better team.
It's a great coaching matchup. I mean, Izzo against Hurley, that'll be a fun one to watch. I don't know. It's hard not to go Big Ten, right, I think, but at the same time, I love Hurley. I'm not sure. I just really don't think Michigan State's got enough to get past UConn. They're so good defensively.
See, and I don't think this is the UConn of the last few years.
It's not, but I don't think it's Michigan State's year either.
Wow. That Carr is so athletic.
Very.
Man. And Jeremy Fears, when he's playing under control, is pretty good too. But I'd take Michigan State in that one.
Okay.
I am going to take UConn.
Atta girl.
I agree with you, Matt, right? Like, point guard for Michigan State is absolutely excellent, but I don't think the depth is there for Michigan State like it is for UConn. You know, UConn has a plethora of playmakers, and I think that's going to be the deciding factor in that game. All right, number 4 seed Nebraska versus number 9 seed Iowa. And by the way, this is one of two Iowa colleges in the Sweet 16, and man, is it causing an uproar in the state.
Oh, boy.
You think they'd be happy for both, right? They are not. It is a downright war. Iowa State fans are rooting for Nebraska. That's just wrong, you know? That's wrong. You shouldn't be able to live in
the state. Oh, it's the same Michigan State.
Yeah, that's true.
There's no love loss.
Yep.
All right, so Nebraska, Iowa, what do you think, John?
Well, the way that Iowa game ended, It was, I mean, both those games were just really, really fun to watch games. There's something about Nebraska not ever winning a tournament game for them to be a little on a Cinderella run a little bit here. They're scrappy. Like when you watch them play, they're good, but it just doesn't look like it should translate. And yet they never get very far away from if they're down, right? They never really build big leads, but they're scrappy. They have a hard time going away. Iowa, I just don't think has enough. It just doesn't feel like it's their year versus I can see Nebraska getting a big win here going to the Elite Eight.
Yeah, I agree. I think the Big Ten's going to win this one.
Way to go, careful Keith. Being out on that limb.
I'm going to go way out now.
You're going to pick the Midwest team, are you?
Yeah. No, I think Nebraska's got this one. Who won in their Big Ten matchup? Do you guys know offhand?
I don't, but I'll tell you this.
Because Nebraska started out on fire.
I was going to say, when Nebraska played season. Wisconsin earlier this year, I thought, holy cow.
Yeah, Nebraska won 17 or 18 in a row.
Yeah. Yes.
So my guess is they got Iowa in that matchup.
As you were talking about their first win, you know, you look at the history of Nebraska and their sports, that's unbelievable stat that they've never won in the tournament in basketball.
Yeah, if they can control Bennett Sturts from Iowa, I think they win. But if Sturts has his way, I think Iowa can beat him.
I'm going to go with Nebraska. I'm going to go with the Midwest.
What was my pick?
What is your pick?
I'm going to take Iowa.
Okay.
I'll take Iowa.
You're going to sit with the Cinderella.
So the next
Cinderella
game, Matt's
got to
pick first.
Yes. Then we can just go against Matt.
And then he picks the opposite.
Yeah. Right?
So then you guys can pick the loser. I got it. Go.
Right.
Yeah, I just think Nebraska is like peaking. You know, again, so I oversee, unfortunately, for Iowa. Number one seed Michigan versus number four seed Alabama. What do we got? Ooh. Matt, we'll start with you, Matt.
I'll take Michigan in this one, although Alabama has a really good freshman as well. But Michigan's got those two players are really good. And I'm at a loss for the name, but the center and the forward.
Yeah, say the name. I want to hear you say it.
I can't. I'd have to look it up now. But I really had not watched Michigan play that much. But they're loaded.
They're loaded.
I can see why they lose one game during the regular season to Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
But here's why Alabama's going to beat them.
Ooh.
Okay.
Alabama is the second leading college team, for three-pointers. All right? They're three-point heavy. How did Wisconsin beat Michigan? They were three-point heavy in the game. So I'm going to pick Alabama. I'm going to say they're on fire on that arc, and they are going to make Michigan scratch their head. And if I was Alabama, I'd be going and watching that Wisconsin, the Wisconsin games, you know, because, it's going to be outside the arc.
I'm going to go with Michigan, though. You had great points, Amy, but I'm going to disagree.
I mean, you're not wrong, Michigan. But here's the thing. Wisconsin beat them in the regular season, and yes, they were hot. This is the NCAA tournament. This is March Madness, and Michigan's going to know exactly what to shut down, and they're not going to let them get beat on three-pointers. You know, one thing that Alabama does is they run a lot of screen action to get those open looks. Michigan is going to do a great job of sagging on their big man. Everybody else is going to switch off. They're not going to let them beat them from behind the mark. Michigan wins by double digits.
Well, Michigan center, Andy Mara. There you go, John.
There it is.
No, he's your Google machine.
Whatever. He's 7'3", so yep. You're right. He can sit back and play a one-man zone.
He can.
And let the other guys guard the three-point line.
Yep.
I love those videos of him standing next to people that are 6'8", you know, and they look like they're 5 foot tall.
Oh, it's like the Florida kid.
Oh, 7'8". Yeah.
That's insane. All right, I'm still saying Alabama, and if I'm right, I hear that John and Matt are taking me to lunch.
What happens if Michigan wins?
So, well, thanks for joining me. All right, Iowa State versus Tennessee.
Iowa State. Yep.
Key injury there.
Yes.
Was it Joshua Jefferson?
Yes. Yep.
Hurt his ankle early in that game. Yep. He's going to be a game-time decision. So that's a big deal. He plays Iowa State. Definitely.
Do you want to hear my notes?
Yep.
Okay. In Iowa, having two teams in the Sweet 16 just might be the best thing since sliced bread. which happened to be invented by a guy from Davenport.
Nice.
Nice, nice.
So yes. I agree. I have in my notes here what the team lacks in flashiness, they make up for in grittiness. So they're a tough team. They got big hearts, which I wish the Badgers would have had in their game. But, yeah, never die attitude. I think that's going to mean a lot. I'm going with Iowa State.
This might be one of the last games you see for that coach also, T.J. Altenberger.
Yep. Yes.
He's very likely going to be moving on potentially a bigger and better spot.
Bigger school?
Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
All right, Purdue versus Texans. Purdue's the 2 seed. Texans are the 11 seed.
Purdue. Big Ten. I like Purdue
Big
here.
Big Ten.
Yeah. Texas, though, I mean, they got hot there. They won the play-in game.
They did.
Right, then they win the first round.
They're riding a big wave of momentum.
They are.
They've been playing in this tournament,
yep,
for sure.
I like the height of Purdue. Matt Painter's a great coach. I just don't think they can get past Purdue.
And a great point guard who just broke the assist record of all time.
Correct.
So it's all about guard play at this point, too.
It is.
And he's steady. He's really good. So I'll take Purdue.
Texas is my is my sleeper team. That's my surprise team. And mainly because I think the players have a point to prove to the coach.
Okay.
If you watch his interviews after the SEC tournament and they stunk. And he was like, this team isn't going anywhere, right?
Yeah.
Like, that was, I think they're coming back with a vengeance, and they are proving somebody wrong. What do you think, Keith? You think?
That very well could be. And sometimes you need something like that to motivate a team. He may be playing chess when they're playing checkers.
Yeah.
And he's using that to motivate the team.
Well, and that coach, Rick Barnes, has been around for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
He's got, I think, well over 300 wins?
Yeah, probably.
He's up there. He's starting to get on that all-time list.
And he knows
what he's doing.
For sure.
All right, gentlemen, we're going to wrap up this little segment here for the Sweet 16. We're going to have a few words from Vegas and Hilgi's and Billy Bob's Sports Bar and Grill. And when we come back, we're going to have Hunter Bumgard joining us from Fox Sports Radio Wisconsin to talk everything Brewers.
Bringing Wisconsin sports to the Northwoods. This is the Sports Q on WJJQ.
Vegan Stewart Express of Tomahawk features a wide range of maple syrup supplies. From beginner kits to taps, filter bags, drill bits, sap sack holders, hydrometers, glass containers to bottle your syrup, plus other supplies. Vegan Stewart Express, North 4th Street in Tomahawk, featuring everything you need for maple syrup season.
Bringing comfort to your home is Hilgi's of Tomahawk's top priority. With their line of furnaces and air conditioning systems, Carrier and Hilgi's are dedicated to improving your quality of life by creating a comfortable and healthy living environment. Carrier makes one of the most efficient heating and cooling systems rated by Energy Star, and millions of people trust Carrier's leadership and expertise in delivering premium solutions for their home heating and cooling needs. You can count on Carrier and Hilgi's to keep you comfortable. Carrier, turn to the experts at Hilgi's LP Gas, South Tomahawk Avenue, or call 453-3505. They're online at hilgi's.com.
Billy Bob's Sports Bar in Grinnell invites you to dine in or carry out all your favorite menu selections, including soup, salad, sandwiches, wraps, and Chicago-style pizza. Happy hour is Monday through Thursday from 2 until 5. On Fridays, Billy Bob serves their fantastic fish fry all day, and Saturday it's prime rib with servings starting at 5 and while supplies last. Billy Bob's Sports Bar and Grill, County Highway L, north of Tomahawk, ready to serve you daily at 11 o'clock. It's Billy Bob's Sports Bar and Grill.
And we're back with the Sports Q, and joining us right now is Hunter Bumgard from Fox Sports Radio Wisconsin to talk everything Brewers. It's opening day tomorrow. How's it going, Hunter?
Going great. Yeah, thanks for having me, and super excited to get the baseball season underway.
I think all of us here in the office are. I've been doing the countdown here at the station. So.
Yes, me too.
Yeah, so finally get to talk opening day. Give us your quick analysis of the Brewers as we begin the 2026 season.
Yeah, I think it's coming off a historic season last year, right? 97 wins, you get to the NLCS, you get, you know, one step away from that World Series that Brewers fans have been missing since 82. And I think you get that close and you think, all right, you know, trying to take the next step every year. Last year was the first year they had won a playoff series since 2018. So kind of the natural progression would hopefully be getting one more round than you got the year before. And if that is the case, then we'll be super happy here as Brewers fans. So, but I think they bring back a really good core of, especially on the offensive side, the position player group, right? You have, you know, Vaughn and Bowers at first base. You have Bryce Terang still at second. Joey Ortiz back at short. And third base will be new with Caleb Durbin traded to Boston. Renjifo and Hamilton probably the platoon over there. But then you have the outfield of Churio out there, Sal Frelick out there. How will Garrett Mitchell fit back in after missing most of the season last year with injury? Brandon Lockridge made the team. We'll see if he can, kind of do what he did in spring training in the regular season as well. And so you have a lot of guys that are coming back. And, of course, Contreras behind the plate. Gary Sanchez will back him up, who was with the Brewers a couple of years ago. So you've got a really, you know, good crop of offensive players. The starting rotation is maybe the question mark, but also maybe the most talented part of the team, which is weird to say. But you've got really a young rotation. You have Brandon Woodruff and then everybody else who's either, you know, in their first or second year in the big leagues when you think about it. Although Kyle Harrison, I guess, made his debut in 23, but overall, they just have not added up to, you know, a couple of years in the big leagues even. So it's going to be fascinating to see how they are. But the great thing about that starting rotation is they've got a lot of talent, and hopefully it just shines through.
Yeah, and speaking of that open rotation, Alex wanted me to ask you what you thought of Miz and Woodruff being the opening day starters, but more so I added to that, that we're featuring a really young, revamped pitching staff led by Miz, starting the game against the White Sox. The team added right-hand pitcher Jake Woodford from the Rays, and we're featuring a bunch of other newcomers, Brandon Sproat and Kyle Harrison, into the rotation. You know, so what's your opinion, A, on picking Miz and Woodruff for opening day starters, and where do we have the depth in the bullpen? And is that what you're seeing?
Sure. So I think with the starting rotation, it's definitely different without Freddie Peralta there. He's been there for, you know, the better part of what, you know, last, I think he made his debut in 2018, if I remember right. So he was with the Brewers for a long time. He was the ace of the staff, that opening day starter for the last couple of years. So it's different not having him in the rotation. However, what they did is they turned that into Brandon Sproat, who came over from the New York Mets in that Freddie Peralta trade, and then they trade Caleb Durbin for a guy in Kyle Harrison, who was the top prospect in the Giants system when he made his debut a couple of years ago. So they are young, and then Chad Patrick, who really pitched well in the playoffs, especially and in the early part of the season last year. And of course, like you said, Jacob Mizorowski and Brandon Woodruff as well. Mizorowski getting the nod on opening day. I think with the rotation, they have a ton of talent. I mean, from what the Brewers have seen in Brandon Sproat and in Kyle Harrison throughout spring training, they are really excited about those guys. And when you talk to Pat Murphy about them, he's like, yeah, they have a ton of talent. It's just about them believing in themselves and also getting experience at the major league level. There's, you know, I think Brandon Sproat had four starts with the Mets last year. And so nothing is going to help them as much as just getting in the major leagues this year, like they are, like they're on the opening day roster, and just getting that experience at the major league level, because these guys are as inexperienced as they are. And so they'll just have to learn how to navigate a full major league season. But I think if they can overcome that, it's going to be significant, because then you can really get into the really good talent that these pitchers have.
Sure, sure. So 2025, there was breakout stars. Can they repeat again, you know, the success on the performances like Andrew Vaughn and the other infielders? Now they're facing the pressure to replicate those numbers. Do you see that happening?
Yeah, they are. I mean, it's a historic season when you go on a couple of, you know, double-digit win streaks and everything like that. It's hard to repeat. I think when you look at, you know, a guy like Bryce Terang, you know, coming into another year under his belt, I think he can honestly, I think he's kind of becoming a star in front of our eyes, and we'll see if he really comes into his own in this season. Jackson Churio is another guy who I would say, if he's going to continue to track towards that superstar track, which we all believe he can be, this is a key year for him. We forget how young he is. I think he's like 22 years old, but this is going to be his third year in the majors. So if he's going to track to be maybe that superstar that, I mean, you compare to other guys maybe in the league, like a Juan Soto, who are really good when they're that young. If he's going to do that, then this is the year for him to do that and hopefully stay healthy. He missed a full month last year with the hamstring injury, so hopefully he can stay healthy. And so it's about, for those guys and a guy like Sal Frelick or even a William Contreras, it's about building on the years that you have, and not many for a lot of those guys, and Churio and Terang and Frelick, and trying to build on those years and truly come into whatever players they're going to be, because they're not really young guys anymore. As much as we thought about this team last year as a bunch of young guys coming out there, they're not as young. They're more experienced, which can really help because now they've been there, done that, and had great experiences both in the regular season and in the postseason. That can only help moving forward. But it's also really going to be time where, okay, what types of careers are these guys going to start to build? And 2026 is going to be a big story in that.
Sure. And talking about the young guys, Hunter, so the Brewers last year led the National League in 164 steals. Are these young guys going to help take it a step further?
Yeah, it's interesting because they still led the National League, but it went down from the year before. So so the Brewers, since they're a team, and under Pat Murphy, as we know, it's a lot about, you know, getting a guy on base, moving him over, stolen bases, speed, athleticism, not as much necessarily hitting the ball out of the ballpark. And so they did that in the first year under Pat Murphy. Then in the second year, they kind of went down in the stolen base. They still led the National League, which is wild, but they were still good in the stolen base category, but not as good as they wanted. So I think that is part of the reason you saw a coaching shakeup on that staff of Pat Murphy's. You have a new first base coach in Spencer Allen, a new third base coach in Matt Erickson. Now, Matt Erickson was already part of the organization and a vital part of the infield success that the Brewers have had on the defensive side, but he takes over at third. Jason Lane comes in the dugout, and he'll kind of be Pat Murphy's right-hand man as Ricky Weeks goes to the front office. But I think that's part of the reason why you saw some of the changes on the coaching staff was they wanted to make sure that they kept that, you know, pedal to the metal, so to speak, when it comes to stolen bases. And you got a guy in David Hamilton who's one of the fastest guys in the league. He came over from Boston in that Caleb Durbin trade. I think you'll see a fair amount of him either at third base or even shortstop. He had a lot of stolen bases in the spring. Brandon Lockridge made the team. He's really fast. Garrett Mitchell's incredibly fast. So I think you'd see that number. If I were to say if they're going to do that number lower or higher, I'd go over that number, because I think they're going to get back to more of that form of the year before, and I think they want to put an emphasis on that with the athleticism that they have.
Hunter, I have one more question for you, and then I got to turn it over to my co-host here, but I want to know your thoughts on, is my guy, Brandon Woodruff, is he going to stay healthy? Is he healthy? Is he going to stay healthy for 2026?
I am crossing my fingers and my toes that is the case. The Brewers are going to be in good shape if he does. You know, it's great. It's great to hear that he's going to be a part of this starting rotation. As spring training went on, there was a lot of talk between him and the organization of, we want to make sure he's healthy later in the season. And I understand that, but also you want him to make as many starts as you can, because he is, like we mentioned, the only veteran in that rotation. We've seen how good he can be. We saw how good he was when he came back last year, but then unfortunately had the season cut short again with that lat injury. But he told us just a couple of days ago in the clubhouse that he is not hurt. He didn't want that to be a story coming out of spring, because he's not hurt. He just wanted to make sure he could build up to where he felt good enough and comfortable enough to pitch in a major league game. And instead of going down and pitching in a couple minor league games before coming up, he's like, you know what, let's pitch at the major league level. The organization agreed. I think, you know, Brandon Woodruff has definitely earned himself that say in where he goes. So he said, let's do it. And so Tuesday night against the Rays next week will be when he makes his debut. So I think they are being very smart and very cautious with him. And so I think that should lend, hopefully, to a healthier season.
Well, thank you very much, Hunter. I'm going to open up to my co-host here. We're going to start with Matt Tyler. Matt, what kind of question do you have for Hunter tonight?
Yeah, Hunter, I think with the amount of depth that the Brewers have, there had to be a couple of tough choices on guys that they sent down. Particularly mine would have been Robert Gasser. But it also speaks to the depth at Nashville and Biloxi that the Brewers are going to have. If they do have some injuries, I think they're in such a far better position than they were last year.
100%, especially on the pitching side. I think that was a very much a priority this offseason. I mean, you had I think about 10 pitchers that were unavailable within the first week of the season last year. And that included guys who you were counting on, Nestor Cortez, Aaron Civale, and then you had Jose Quintana, who was still building up. Obviously, Brandon Woodruff was out as well. And then a bunch of bullpen arms were also hurt last year. And so you had Elvin Rodriguez and Tyler Alexander starting games, and nothing against those guys, but those guys are not, you know, Kyle Harrison's and Brandon Sproats and Robert Gasser's and Logan Henderson. So I think what they did this offseason is say, okay, as much as, you know, we love Caleb Durbin, if we can trade him, get a couple of pieces back, Kyle Harrison and Shane Drouin. Kyle Harrison made the opening day roster. I think we'll see Drouin at some point at the major league level this season. Get some depth there. Also, they got obviously Sproat in the deal for Freddy Peralta. And adding back, like you said, a guy like Robert Gasser or Logan Henderson, I think they are really set up if, in you know, and there's going to be a pitching injury or two throughout the season. We already saw Quinn Priester is on the injured list to start the year. And hopefully he's back in early May if all goes well. But yeah, that depth in the pitch, in the pitching side of things for the Brewers is going to be key, because I think it can prohibit you from that slow start that they had last year because they were just trying to find their footing on the pitching side.
Hey, Hunter, it's Keith here. How are you?
Good. How are you, Keith?
Doing real good. I'm sure you watched every spring training game. Was there any person that surprised you by not making the 26-man roster?
I think the biggest surprise to me was probably Blake Perkins. He has been a key part of what the Brewers have done over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
He plays an exceptional defensive center field. However, And actually, Pat Murphy said last year that if Blake Perkins was ever sent down, that he would send himself down. So I kind of thought, okay, he's absolutely beloved by the manager, and he is. And I kind of thought that might keep him on the team. But Brandon Lockridge got the spot over him, and he came out and he hit really well. He hit about .318 in spring, hit 4 home runs. Was really, really productive, and you couldn't really put him down to Triple A. And instead, you send Blake Perkins down, who really could never find his footing offensively last year.
Right.
Like I said, great defense, but
yep,
just could not quite find that offense. So I think that was probably the main impetus for that move. And Brandon Lockridge gets, and we'll see if he can take advantage. I'd be surprised if we don't see Blake Perkins at some point this season at the major league level, whether it's because of injury or someone not performing. But right now, that would probably be the biggest surprise of the roster.
All right. Thanks, Hunter.
Hunter, this is John Long. Good to talk to you, my friend.
You too.
I'll keep this kind of quick. I know we're going to bump up against it soon. But last year, the Brewers kind of surprised everybody. They win more games than anybody else in the regular season. Obviously fell short of the ultimate goal, but had a fantastic season. Yet here we are again. The prognosticators are picking the Brewers finishing anywhere from last to third to last to maybe runner-up in the NL Central. Do you, as a guy who's spending some time around the Brewers, obviously, is there a chip-on-the-shoulder kind of feel to the Brewers? And are they kind of using this as fuel of like, oh my gosh, here we got to prove ourselves yet again?
It's fascinating because that is like it seems like every year they do this, and the Brewers have won 4 of the last 5 division titles, and they've won 3 in a row, which is not easy to do.
No.
And they had the most wins in baseball last year. Yet I saw some projections of like the Pirates having the same amount of wins, and I'm like, are we looking at the same team here? Are we
right?
What I mean, I get the Pirates have Paul Skeens, but I don't know anybody else on that team. I follow baseball really well. But I got to say, like, when you look at the Brewers and you look at, like you said, there is no doubt that I think Pat Murphy uses that to his advantage and uses that not necessarily like gets in the clubhouse and says, you know, every night, you know, nobody thinks we're going to win tonight. Let's go win. It's more so like, and it actually was evident in some of the, like, he always gives a speech to the team to start spring training, and the Brewers put some of that out. And it was a lot of like, yeah, we don't care what they say. We know what we got in this room. Bryce Turang commented on that the other day in the clubhouse too. Like, we know what we got in this room, and whatever other people say, does not matter. I think they see it, you know, and they may chuckle at it, but I think for the most part, that kind of internally probably, you know, it gets a little bit of a chip on their shoulder, but also at the same time, it's like, okay, who cares about that? We're just going to go about our business. Christian Yelich comments on it. And he's asked it every single year. He's probably been asked about it for like, I think it's eighth season in Milwaukee. He's probably been asked about it every year. And he's like, at some point, I think they just keep doing this because they're going to at some point be able to say, yeah, we told you so. But then he's like, but at that point, you know, you've already won a bunch of division titles and everything. So I think it works to the advantage because Pat Murphy loves to use, I think, those types of things as motivation. And it's not necessarily like, look at this guy. He predicted us to have 80 wins and we're going to have more. It's more so just like, hey, you know, let's go out and play our game and show the world what we have because we know what we have, and let's go show it.
Well, thank you so much, Hunter. It's Brewers versus White Sox opening day tomorrow afternoon at 1:10, the first pitch. So what do you be looking for at American Family Field against the White Sox?
Yeah, I think just it's going to be fun to see these guys in a game that counts after so many games that don't get, you know, it's hard to put into like, okay, what do spring training numbers mean? It's like if a guy has a really good spring training, it's like, okay, it's just spring training. If a guy has a bad spring training, it's like, okay, it's just spring training. So good to have the games count. Excited to see what kind of mile per hour Mizorowski can hit tomorrow because, you know, he's going to be amped up with the full house and opening day going on and all the festivities. But excited to start another Brewers season, and I think it's going to be an exciting one because you have a lot of talent on this roster.
Well, I know we are all excited here, and we will be tuned in at 1:10 on Brewer.tv. So thank you so much, Hunter, for filling us in on what's going to be happening throughout the season. We look forward to catching up with you after the game next week.
Absolutely. Thank you all.
Thanks, Hunter. Take care.
Bye, Hunter.
See you, Hunter.
And that wraps. And that wraps it up with Hunter Bumgard from Fox Sports Radio Wisconsin, everything Brewers. Got a quick word from Lincoln County Cycles and Weld Riley Subway of Tomahawk, and we'll be coming back here shortly with the sports queue.
Pretty soon, the snow's going to melt. The grass is going to pop up overnight. And you're going to look out the window thinking, well, guess I should have fixed that mower last fall. Good news, the folks at Lincoln County Cycles are ready for you. Right now, they're having the Cub Cadet Zero Turn Ultimate Steering Wheel Event, where you can save $100 to $600 off select units through April 1st. That means you can upgrade the mower and still have enough left over for bait and prods. And if your current mower starts, eventually, after a few choice words and maybe a kick to the tire, bring it in during March for service for the season and get $40 off any service. So whether you need a brand new Cub Cadet or you just want your old mower to stop smoking like Uncle Gary's fish shack, head over to Lincoln County Cycles and get ready for mowing season. Lincoln County Cycles, keeping Northwoods lawns in line one Cub Cadet at a time. Mike and the team thank you for shopping locally. Call 453-2300 for Lincoln County Cycles.
Looking for trusted legal help close to home? Weld Riley Attorneys have been serving individuals and businesses for nearly 50 years. With over 30 attorneys in 5 locations, they are proud now to have a brand new office right here in Tomahawk at 199 Oneida Drive. Whether it's personal legal matters or business or corporate needs or simply legal advice, you can count on Weld Riley for dedicated, responsive service. For experience you'd expect from the city, but service you'd expect from home, call 715-224-3411 to schedule your appointment with Weld Riley Attorneys. Happy to be a part of our Tomahawk community.
Subway of Tomahawk is a proud sponsor of the Tomahawk Hatchets. Fuel up before or after the game with fresh subs, crisp salads, and, of course, one of our famous cookies for your sweet tooth. Planning a team get-together or family celebration? Let Subway make it easy with catering. Just give us a call or use the Subway mobile app for easy ordering, and we'll handle the rest. We're proud to support the Tomahawk Hatchets and help to keep our community and local athletes fueled and ready for victory.
Talking about the sports teams that you care about. Youth, high school, college, and pro. This is the Sports Q on WJJQ.
And welcome back to WJJQ 92.5 Sports Q. I'm Amy Mackey. I'm filling in for Alex Cook this evening as he's under the weather. Joined is Matt Tyler, Keith Hansey, and John Long. The four of us talked before we came on air, and we all agreed that we needed to, I don't even want to call it a shout-out, Montag. Mr. Fergie passed away. Very influential person in Tomahawk, especially in our age groups, right? Like, we were all just laughing because I said, well, it was Mr. Fergie's first name, and I was always told it was Mr. when his obituary came, it made my heart heavy. I missed the hugs. I missed my hand tiny in his hand with the big old ring on, right? And but man, what a great guy for us and people ahead of us and behind us, having him at every sporting event.
Yeah, I had the luxury of working with Jim for 20 plus years at Lincoln Hills, and I never missed a day going down to his office and talking to him about nothing, about absolutely nothing. But I mean, you're talking about a guy that was a football player at DC Everest, and then he went to North Dakota State, was a two-time All-American.
Yep.
His coach was Ron Earhart, who then coached for the New England Patriots, and he was also nominated for the 2014 College Hall of Fame. Just to give you an idea of some of the guys he went up against, Eric Bieniemy, Trev Alberts, Tony Baselli, Brian Bosworth, Randall Cunningham, Sterling Sharp, Tom Kuzno, Eric Crouch, Eric Dickerson. I mean, that was
that's the quite class. A list
that is
right there.
Quite a list. was and as good a football player as you can imagine, he was a bigger character. He was absolute.
The stories
character.
Were amazing, right?
He always had a story.
Yeah,
he did.
But talking about his Bison career at North Dakota, I'm fortunate enough to know a few coaches out there. I reached out to them and said, if you didn't know, Fergie passed away, and Bison Nation was amazing. Amazing. Like, they emailed me back and they said, thank you. You know, we're reaching out to the family. And so it's still, after all these years, just to know what kind of influence you had on a football program, you know, for them to just, they were heartbroken.
Yeah.
So that just speaks volumes for the kind of person that Jim was.
Yeah, and I went to Vegas a few times in my life, but you'd always see North Dakota State people dress like in North Dakota State
yes.
gear.
Oh, they're everywhere. They're
and I would always stop them and say, okay, are you a true North Dakota State fan? Yeah, yeah. Have you ever heard of Jim Fergie? Oh, yeah. Oh, I sure have. Probably two out of every three people I stopped knew who Jim Fergie was.
Oh, absolutely.
This was somebody that played in the late 60s.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So definitely a hard hit to our community.
Definitely.
Keith, you got a good story?
Well, I have played adult hockey with his sons.
Yeah, yeah.
And he had every game, like every tournament that we'd go to.
Yep.
And he would not be the last one there, but he would always stay there and talk and give, you know, the guys that weren't very good. not me, but like some of those guys, give them a hard time. But
Never you, probably.
I don't think it was me.
No.
I don't remember. I don't remember. But no, they were fantastic. And he'd just hang around in that, because we're in a rink, in that North Dakota jacket.
I know why he hung around there, too, Keith.
Why's that?
He was waiting to get a hot dog. That man loved hot dogs nobody's business.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what. This will mark my 20th year I've lived in Tomahawk. And I started coaching football just a couple years after I moved here. And he was one of the first guys that I talked to in the community that, you know, wanted to give me some pointers. And I thought, I didn't know him. And I thought, who is this guy? And I quickly found out who this guy was. Just kind of a legend. And very wise, great with kids. You know, he's the kind of guy you'd walk into a room and the room would light up, you know. And spend a lot of games on the chain gang on the
I was going to say, you still
field.
Do the chain gang, yes.
And yeah. I don't know how many conversations he had before or after the game. And as great a guy as he was, I think you talk about legacy of someone, you know, they've got three kids, you know, Jake and Matt and Megan, and they're just fantastic people.
Absolutely.
And I think, you know, good people generally raise good people, and that whole family, you know, I think is a testament to just the kind of man that he was.
He had a brother just a little bit older than him that also, I think, he played at Point and was drafted by the Cowboys. Jim was drafted by the Colts the year the Colts won the Super Bowl. He was the last player cut, and he was a defensive player, but they wanted him to play center. And during the whole camp, he had mono, and he was the last guy cut from that team.
Wow.
So, I guess I didn't know that story. Had mono. All those stories that he tells. I'm sure that's not the
I
one
spent
he
a
wants
lot of time
to share,
with
right? Right? Yeah, and it would be, I'm sure. I mean, how many years was he at Lincoln Hills?
He told me this. He was there when the first kid walked through the gate.
Really?
And he said it was funny because there was teachers and social workers. He said they were pulling that kid end to end because everybody wanted a piece of that kid to work with him, you know. Yeah. So he was there, it had to be 35 plus years, easy.
Wow.
And how many kids do you think? I mean, like, just...
Thousands.
I know. And you just think about the kids in the community, you know, that he changed or... You just knew, like, he motivated you. He'd walk into a room and you'd be like, oh, my, scared, right? Like, holy cow, that's a really big guy.
He is.
Right? And then, but he, and his eyes would just light up and he'd smile.
Yeah.
Like, he just loved athletics, loved kids, period, and motivating you.
Yeah, he did a really cool thing there, too. He organized something called the Summer Games. And there was another facility in Ethan Allen. And they would do Olympic-style games. At one time, we competed against Ethan Allen, and then that got a little to the point where we couldn't do that so much because of the travel. But every summer, we had an Olympic Games where at the end of the week, we actually brought out a podium, and kids got their first, second, and third place medal. That was Fergie's time to shine. He loved that. He got to get up and speak in front of the whole crowd, and he really enjoyed that.
Oh, that's amazing. Well, I'm so glad that we could... talk about him and remember him and in such a positive way. With that, there is no mascot madness tonight. Amy, I know, like, the majors, right? Don't we all know the majors?
Yeah.
But I do have a little challenge for y'all.
Of course you do.
Of course. I have the top 10 traditions. And at a university of football. And it's all revolved around football.
Okay.
All right?
Yep.
So you're going to tell me if you know what college it is.
Okay.
All right.
And I like this.
I have
I like
to try
this.
To be elusive with some of these because... how about the sound of clanging cowbells that's become an unmistakable display of this school's spirit? And it dates back roughly a century.
Oh, wow.
Texas?
I would have guessed Texas. Yeah.
No.
Texas A&M?
That's
a good guess.
And it was banned in 1974. And they let it come back in 2010.
I would say Oklahoma.
No.
More cowbell. We need more cowbell.
You're never going to believe this.
Okay.
Mississippi State University.
I wouldn't have got that one.
No.
In 100 years.
No.
Okay.
All right. So how about... Tumors Drugs was the only place in this city with a telegraph, and its employees would adorn its power line with ticker tape whenever they got the news about this university's winning game. And at some point, ticker tape was substituted for toilet paper, and today the faithful roll is by chucking rolls of toilet paper over oak trees and power lines to celebrate their team's big win.
Alabama.
No.
It's not.
No, it's Auburn, isn't it?
It is.
It's Auburn.
That's what I meant. Auburn.
Yeah, yeah.
Auburn.
What's the name
University.
Of the famous tree there?
Yeah. It's right out in front of there, but didn't it get poisoned or something?
And
it was.
Yep.
Okay.
The whole university was going to shut down.
So now they're going to get a little easier for you here.
Okay.
When legendary coach Frank Howard was given a rock from Death Valley, it was then set on a pedestal at the top of the hill leading down to the field. They've been taking part in this tradition of rubbing this rock since 1967.
That'd be the Clemson Tigers.
That is the Clemson Tigers.
Very good, Matt.
Yeah. Okay, okay, so now we're going to see the beloved tradition for football players and tailgaters alike participate in the Thunder Walk. It takes place immediately before this university's home game, inviting fans to crowd around the Joan C. Edwards Stadium entrance and make their school spirit known to the team. Now you got to think movies here.
The Marshall Thundering Herd?
It is the Marshall Thundering Herd. Nice.
Very nice.
Okay, how about William?
William and Mary?
No. Who participates in the 12th man since 1922 when former player E. King Gill was summoned from a press box by the coach as the team was decimated by injuries and only 11 players were left on the field? Gill waited on the sidelines in his jersey ready to step in until they beat their undefeated top-ranked opponents. So today, over 100 years later, for the entirety of each football and basketball game, this student section stands in unison, demonstrating their willingness, readiness, and loyalty to their team.
Oh, I don't know that one.
Oof.
I don't, but I'm going to take a wild guess at Texas A&M.
It is Texas A&M. Look at you.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking that too, Matt.
Couldn't decide between
A&M.
No, Utah State and Texas A&M.
All right. The Little Three. Do you know the Little Three? They've been playing each other since 1910. They don't necessarily compete for a national championship or top ranking. The competition between these small liberal arts college just might be the country's oldest intercollegiate athletic conference without any membership change. So the Little Three is essentially a foil to the larger and more well-known Big Three, the Ivy League schools, Harvard, Princeton, and Yale. Though the rivalry between both trios are equally fierce.
Ooh.
So would that be?
Like Brown?
No.
Dartmouth?
No.
Are we?
They're little.
Little.
These are like little, small, liberal arts colleges.
Should we know this? I mean.
Probably not, because it's Williams College.
No.
Amherst College. And Westland College, or University.
Wouldn't have got that one.
No. I wouldn't even get close.
All right, I'll make the last two super simple before we take a quick break, and then John Larson comes in to talk about high school softball. Metallica entrance.
Virginia Tech.
Nice. Enter Sandman.
That's right.
If you're listening, and if you've never seen that, YouTube it, because
it is amazing.
Will make the hair stand up in the back of your
neck. That will do that, Virginia. And then this one will make you cry.
Iowa.
Yes. The Hawkeye it's Wave.
Great tradition.
It's a great
one. Is. If you don't know what the Hawkeye Wave is, over 70,000 football fans, players, and officials, even the officials, turn and wave to the kids and the families at the University of Iowa Steed Family Children's Hospital.
That's relatively new.
Yeah, it is.
In the last 10 years.
All right. Last one.
And jump around, Wisconsin.
Anyone, you can't look at my notes.
I did. I was just reading your mind.
1998 against Purdue, and Drew Brees is when they did it.
Really?
It was 1998. Yeah. Well, no. Yes, 1998. Mm-hmm. And then when did he come to the game to get everybody riled up? Do you remember?
It wasn't that long ago.
It was. It was 1993.
93?
93. Yeah.
How could 93? They do it if it started in 98? How could he come in 93?
It just says that it got
the guy from House of Pain?
The original source of the tradition is when they snuck a megaphone and the disman in the football game to rile up the student section in 1993. The first time Jump Around was played over the loudspeaker. Over the loudspeaker.
Over the loudspeaker.
So, it was 1998.
They were doing it in the student section.
Gotcha.
Back in 93.
All right, well, we're going to head to a quick few words from Brickner Park City, Wild Rivers Real Estate, and then we'll be back with head softball coach John Larson.
During the Declaration of Deals sales event at Brickner's Park City, Jeep Chrysler Dodge and Ram in Merrill, check out the closeout pricing on all of our new 2025 Jeep Grand Cherokees with pricing starting under $40,000. 2026 Jeep Wranglers in stock, also priced under $40,000. Or grab our last call Wrangler 392 edition with the Sky Slider roof, sale price from $89,999. The best deals on the Brickners and Merrill lot can be found in the row of Chrysler Pacifica minivans. All come with a $4,000 rebate, or let my lease specialist show you how you can take advantage of up to $9,750 in lease cash. On the subject of leasing, we have been clearing out our 2026 Ram 1500 Laramie Crew Cabs because of insane lease cash deals. Looking for fuel economy? The all-new Jeep Cherokee 4x4 is back. It's longer, still has 3,500 pounds of towing, and gets a combined 37 mpg. Test drive one today. There's always a whole lot of good going on at Brickner's Park City. Jeep Chrysler Dodge and Ram in Merrill. 1-800-499-JEEP or on the web at BricknersParkCity.net. Tax, title, service fees extra to qualified credit.
Are you looking to sell your home? Or maybe you are looking for the home of your dreams? We are experienced real estate agents and would be happy to help you buy or sell your home.
Or answer any of your real estate related questions. I'm Matt Tyler. Please give me a call at 715-490-1820.
And I'm John Long. You can reach me at 715-966-2251.
Wild Rivers Group Real Estate of Tomahawk, serving the entire Northwoods area. Look us up on the web at wildriversgroup.com.
Or stop in and see us at 1414 North 4th Street in Tomahawk. Wild Rivers Group Real Estate, expert caring guidance every step you take.
And welcome back to the Sports Q here on 92.5 WJJQ. Joining me is head softball coach John Larson. Good evening.
Hey, how are you?
Living the dream.
Awesome.
All right. You asked if I was nervous that I was going to grill you. Are you ready?
Let's go.
All right. So, week and a half of practice is under the belt, and you had to start it all in a blizzard. What have you learned about your squad? And I bet you're really enjoying being able to get outside a little bit this week.
Well, first of all, it was really nice to get outside today. You know, living in Wisconsin and doing this for 35 years, you've had your extremes of weather. We've been outside the day one, and then the next 2 weeks we're inside, and then we're inside, and then we're up. It's that time of year. It's Wisconsin, northern Wisconsin. You just get used to it. It's not fun to be inside because you're limited in what you can do in a gym. But you try to change it up. You try to keep things where the girls can stay focused and get some good work in. And, you adjust. You don't go as long as you would like. And with practice, you can't do as much. So first week and a half has been good. I got a great group of girls, 22 of them. That's down a little bit from past years, but we feel good about that because there's so many in our conference right now that don't have enough to have two teams. Lakeland and Pines just bowed out this week with only having a varsity, and there's a couple other schools that are on the radar, according to Coach Flynn, that may be in the same boat. So we feel good about that. It's not where we ideally would like to be, but we can support two teams, and the girls have been working hard so far this season.
And 7 wins last season, including 4 in the GNC. What do you need to improve the most from last year to this year?
Well, the biggest thing is we thought as coaches we fell short of where we thought we could be come tournament time. We build our schedule each and every year to face the best competition we can, you know, with reason. I mean, we're locked into the GNC, but the GNC is tough. We week in and week out, we play good teams, and 80% of our schedule is D2 or better on our schedule, but we embrace that, and that's what we want. We want to play that level of competition because we feel that's going to get us ready for the tournament, and then when we go to the tournament, we're in Division III, and we feel good about our chances. So I think the biggest thing is we got to finish. We had some close games and some games that we felt we could have won. And then we just got to step it up a notch. The nice thing with the group of girls, I was young last year. I got pretty much everybody back except for one starter. I got my pitcher back, my number one back, and then a solid 2 and 3. So we just got to go out and play with confidence, trust our skill, believe that we can beat the teams. We had great team discussions already talking about how, last year you know, oh, it's Mosinee. You get off the bus, you're beat already. You know, Medford, get off the bus, you're beat already. So our girls have changed that mindset already, and we've talked about that extensively here these first 2 weeks. And I like the way they've approached the start of the season, and I think, you know, we got to go in and give it our best shot and understand when you play a team like that, you could play very well and still lose. So they shouldn't get their dobbers down. We just got to be ready against those better, higher-level teams and take things to another level.
And speaking of that depth with seniors, you have 8 starters returning from last season, including 2 of your top pitchers, Carmen Cracklow and Sophie Olson. So how do you see your pitching look this year and some of that younger talent coming up? Are they going to be able to give these girls some rest and break, too, so they can...
Well, Cameron was a freshman last year, and she actually exceeded our expectations last year on the mound, and she really did a nice job for us all season long and ended up throwing a lot more innings than I ever anticipated her throwing. And the nice thing about Cameron is she's matured, not just physically, but between the ears, which I think is huge for a pitcher. She's worked extremely hard this offseason and in the winter. She's played a lot of winter ball and traveled and done a lot of tournaments with Avery Petta. So we feel that she's taken her game to the next level. And then Sophie's been just a solid contributor when we need her to be. But at the end of the day, when you look at it, we got people that can step in if Cam is struggling. But when you look at the stats of everybody that gets too deep into the tournament run and at state, 90%, 95% of their pitching is done by one pitcher. So we're expecting big things from Cam. She knows that. I think she's ready for that next step. And I think as a sophomore, she's going to be just that much better from all the things that she's accomplished.
So, yeah, Anita Zert, Avery Petta, and Aubrey, is it Schubert?
Soibert.
Soibert. All returning to the lineup. How does your hitting look this year?
I'll be honest. Our hitting right now overall with the experience we got coming back, I feel really good about it. We've done a lot of great things so far in the first 2 weeks of practice. We're focusing more on live hitting than we are the machine. The machine we used a lot in open gyms January through March just to get some reps, get the rust out. And I think a lot of our girls have taken a lot of pride in being better offensive players at the plate and not just hitting the ball but also doing some small ball, which is bunting. And we've taken a lot of pride. We've probably focused more on bunting in the first 2 weeks of practice than we ever have in a long time at our request as coaches, but also the girls said we need to do a better job from top to bottom in our lineup with that part of our game. But I think just having that overall experience with so many girls last year that never had that next level experience to know what that experience is about is just going to make that part of our game so much better going into the season.
And with Lydia Zert graduating, you know, it leaves a hole at first base. So who do you think is going to fill that hole for you guys? And, you know, that first baseman's usually your team leader, your get-goer, your, you know, making sure everybody's head's staying in the game. Do you have somebody to fill that position?
Well, we have several candidates that could play in that spot. I mean, Sienna Calkins is back out playing softball after taking 2 years off. She's a dual-sport athlete, which we are very happy to have back, and she's one of those candidates for that position, as is Autumn Merrigan. Autumn is probably one of our most versatile athletes. I feel comfortable as a coach playing her anywhere defensively with the exception of being a pitcher. She is that good and knows the game that well that our comfort level as coaches is she could play anywhere. So we feel good about it. And she's not the only one that has that versatility, but hers is better than anything. So right now, those are a couple people that could be there. Ellie Mickey could come from the outfield and go there. You like those taller people at first base. But everything will fall into place. You know, game one after Easter break or at weekend, our lineup is one lineup. The next game, it could be completely different. 2 weeks later, it could be completely different. We're just going to kind of get a feel for where everybody can excel and play at their highest level. And once we iron that out, we'll go with that lineup. But like I said, having as many experienced players back, it makes life a lot easier on a coach.
It sure does. Yes. It sure does. And talking about numbers throughout the GNC and some of the schools not having the girls turnout, how do you see the Great Northern Conference shaping up this year?
Well, right now, the two teams that I'm putting as our stiffest competition without any doubt is Mosinee and Medford. Those two teams are loaded. Mosinee has the same team they've had since sophomore year. They are tougher than nails. Medford is tougher than nails. Those are our two people we have in our sights right now that we feel are going to be our toughest competition in the GNC.
Gentlemen, do you have any final thoughts for Coach?
Yeah, I do. Last year, I thought your freshman class showed no fear, John. And you don't see that a lot with freshmen. And I really thought it played up in the playoff game against Appleton Xavier.
Yeah.
I thought they played with nothing to lose. The one thing they always say is about freshmen, the best thing about freshmen is they become sophomores.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So talk about that group a little bit as far as where they've come from that freshman year to that.
Well, I think when you're talking about Anita and you're talking about Autumn and you're talking about Cam and you're talking about Ellie Mickey, those girls, if you were to ask people at the end of our season, what grade do you think those girls are in? None of them would have said they were freshmen. They really grew as softball players, but that's a credit to them, first of all, because, you know, we tell them to trust their skill, play with confidence. You're here for a reason. We got you on varsity for a reason. We're not just going to put you there and let you fail. You have the ability, and I think they believed in that ability, and having that year of experience under their belt just gives them, makes them even more confident going into this year as sophomores.
So any, besides Sienna, any other surprises on the team this year, or maybe freshmen that came up that you haven't seen as much play?
Well, to be honest, our freshman class this year is quite small compared to last year. We only have three freshmen out.
Okay.
And that's kind of what has come all the way through youth in that grade. And
yeah.
It's unfortunate. Don't ask me why that class would be different. No, just right now, the thing that's been impressive about all 22 girls is how our older kids have embraced our younger kids, made them feel part of this program and proud to be a Hatchet softball player. What we do the first week and a half, which we did until today was the first day we split into what our teams are going to be, mm-hmm. We always mix our older kids with our younger kids in our groups.
Okay.
And they have to get to know those kids. We do a question of the day the first couple days of the season, and that forces them to talk to those young kids and gets those young kids comfortable and not intimidated by our older kids. And right now, the camaraderie of our team and everything that's going on in the first week and a half, almost 2 weeks, has been very exciting.
Excellent.
Your fundraiser still going on?
It is.
And how about you tell the listeners where they can find them or what it is? I obviously have personal knowledge having a student in high school, but what do you have the ladies doing?
Well, our fundraiser is similar to what it's been. We've always sold just a physical discount card. And our fundraising guy, who has been with us forever in the softball program, he went to an app now. That's kind of the new way and what people are doing, and we are still selling cards, the same card, but it's digital now. Not everybody likes that, but there's also other things on the card where people can just donate money. If they don't want a card, they can just donate, whereas in the past that wasn't really something that they did and gave kids money. Now they can just do that on the app. And there's some festival foods thing on there, so if anyone travels and does festival foods, they can buy that too, and that's whatever. But we started that a week ago tomorrow, and right now we've raised right around $12,000.
Nice.
In that, our goal is 20.
Sure.
At which we get a certain percentage of that. I don't know exactly what it is, but it's a decent amount of money. And I'll be honest, we need to fundraise. I know we fundraise our town of our city of Tomahawk to death. Our community is phenomenal when it comes to that. They understand why. If we weren't able to fundraise, we couldn't be able to have half the equipment we have do half the things that we could do to be able to build our programs and just maintain the level that we're at. And my girls especially, and this goes back years, every year our girls have done a phenomenal job of fundraising. Absolutely phenomenal. Last year we had 24 girls out for softball, and when we sold the card, we sold over 1,000 of those discount cards, 24 girls. Our fundraise guy said, nobody does that in a school your size with only 24 players. He said it's phenomenal.
So if somebody listening wants to get one, how would they just find a softball girl?
Absolutely. They can send our girls the text. They'll send them the app on their phone, and they just got to open it up and let it roll.
Well, we wish you the best of luck this season. You play behind the high school.
Correct.
Just so everybody, you know, some people ask. So play behind the high school on the other side of the track. And
toward the north end of the football field.
Yeah, and we're going to stress how important it is for community involvement and getting behind the girls, right?
Right, for sure.
That gives them, it helps them win.
Right. And I'll be honest, that's just to speak to that, Amy. Our Hatchet fans are awesome. At all of our home games, we have a lot of support. We have a lot of fans. They come out. The small amount of bleachers we have there are usually full, and we got lawn chairs all up and down our first and third baseline. It's really cool to see. And what's really nice to see, it's not just people from the kids we have now. You see alumni there, and you see parents of players that are still coming to the games that their kid has been gone for 10 years. And we even have some old timers like Tom Seavey still coming to those games. So, it's awesome. And our community has been awesome that way, too, as well.
That's great to hear. Well, again, best of luck at your season this year from all of us here at the station.
Thanks much. Very much.
And we look forward to calling a few of those games for you.
Awesome. Can't wait.
All right. We'll be right back to finalize up the sports queue here on 92.5 WJJQ.
John J. Shuni Construction is a family-owned company serving the area with trucking, excavating, and Wausau Homes. Their Wausau Homes Design Studio is at 1708 North 4th Street in Tomahawk, and they're ready to help make every home buyer's experience an enjoyable one from start to finish. Call 453-2015 for excavating, trucking, and Wausau Homes from John J. Shuni Construction of Tomahawk.
This is Keith Hansey, broker associate with Northwoods Community Realty. Northwoods Community Realty is a company founded on community-focused values and premier real estate services to buyers and sellers in the entire Northwoods area. Whether you're looking for lake homes or city homes for sale, selling your property, or just want to know what your property is worth, give me a call at 966-1032. I have a deep knowledge of the area and understand our local real estate market. Give me a call, Keith Hansey, for all your real estate needs and questions at 966-1032 with Northwoods Community Realty.
We have tasted a bit of warmer weather this early spring, so now is the time to think about your air conditioning systems because hot weather is right around the corner. Call Premier Heating and Cooling at 453-4700. Premier offers the Dave Lennox Signature Collection of air conditioners and furnaces designed from the inside out to look good and work better than ever. Lennox is proud to be an official Energy Star partner and offer Lennox home comfort systems that save you energy and money. Call Premier today. Josh will give you all the information about Dave Lennox Signature Collection with a furnace just right for your heating and cooling needs to be ready for a hot summer. Lennox innovation never felt so good. Premier Heating and Cooling at the intersection of Muskellunge Lake Road and County Road A. Call 453-4700 and online at premierheatingcooling.com. And at the WJJQ Home Show, April 11th and 12th at the Tomahawk School Complex.
You'll always find one of the largest selections of quality used vehicles every day at the Auto House on North 4th and Tomahawk. And by the way, Randy at the Auto House would like to thank everyone who called and stopped by to make sure he wasn't asleep behind the desk and wish him the best of luck on his new adventure. Randy plans on continuing to do things the right way at the Auto House, and that means offering safe and reliable, previously loved vehicles at prices you're going to like. And as always, there's an ASC-certified shop to keep your vehicle running as it should. And if you need a rental vehicle, you can get one at the Auto House. The Auto House on North 4th and Tomahawk and online at AutoHouseCars.net. That's AutoHouseCars.net. The Auto House, generationally doing business the right way for over 40 years.
What does it mean to be local on purpose? Crossbridge Community Bank is the only bank headquartered and led in Lincoln County. We make decisions about your mortgage and service our loans right here in Tomahawk and Merrill. That means less time waiting on some decisions from afar, answers when and how you need them. Building construction companies love working with Crossbridge because they don't have to wait on a construction draw from a complicated process. Being local just makes working with us easier. It's as simple as that. Crossbridge Community Bank, purpose first, FDIC insured, equal housing lender.
And welcome back to 92.5 WJJQ Sports Q. I'm Amy Mackey filling in for Alex Cook, who is a little under the weather today. I am joined by John Long, Keith Hansey, and Matt Tyler. Just wrapped up a conversation with head coach John Larson for the girls softball team. Local sports baseball practice officially began on Monday. I know they're enjoying being able to get some outside time also. Thursday, Tomahawk Track and Field will be at Northland Pines at 4:30. And then on Saturday, Tomahawk Track and Field will be at Lakeland. That starts at 9 a.m. Next week, Monday, golf practice gets underway. I think they'll get on the course. Probably not.
Simulator.
Yeah, right? And then next week, softball season and Tomahawk baseball season opener will be at Rhinelander for both teams. Also, in local sports, we have a quick notoriety thing of recipients here that John Long's going to take care of.
Nicole Brown, who does a great job with the Legacy Hall of Fame over there at Tomahawk Bowl, sent us the list of the 2026 Hall of Fame inductees, and wanted to give them some recognition. Sandy Carstensen, Phyllis Dotter, Jack Engberg, Fred Hebert, John Pickett, and Rosalie Wido. We're all inducted into the Legacy Hall of Fame over there at Tomahawk Bowl. Some fantastic bowlers there. I really like what the new ownership has done over at Tomahawk Bowl, really embracing the history of the bowlers we have here in Tomahawk. Those guys are doing a fantastic job.
It's always packed.
It is. It's just busy, busy. They're busy. Running a good business over there. It's a fun place to be.
Yes. When something busy must be good, right?
Absolutely.
All right, gentlemen, let's do. We're going to do our quick recap of the Sweet 16 here starting tomorrow on Friday. Do you have a Cinderella team? Do you see an upset?
I don't remember who I picked.
No. Well, if I remember right, it's mostly chalk, except for we started talking about earlier today, and then you just went opposite of Keith and I.
Right, right.
Well, wouldn't you?
I think you picked Iowa. You picked Iowa over Nebraska.
Yeah, I did pick Iowa over Nebraska.
So that might be your Cinderella.
I think Iowa and Texas are the two lowest remaining seeded teams.
Texas is my Cinderella team. I think they're going to be pretty
good. Yeah, so Amy, you and I have gone out on a limb a little bit, unlike the other two.
Yeah. Do you know ESPN said there's absolutely zero intact bracket.
Oh, yeah. No perfect brackets anywhere.
No perfect brackets anywhere.
It's incredible when you think about
the number, like, the staggering number of people that fill out brackets.
And like ESPN, you can put in 25 brackets, I think it is, or 24 or something like that. So you know people are putting in totally, and not one is correct.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, Wisconsin.
Obviously, Texas being the 11 seed, but, you know, if I'm going to pick a dark horse here. Even at a 4 seed, I think nobody saw them getting this far as Nebraska.
Yeah.
I think a 4 seed now, when you get to this point, is Cinderella.
Yeah.
A little bit.
At least to get to the final four, because you've got to go through a 1.
1 or a 2.
You've got to go through a 1.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. 4 is going to be at the top, so yeah.
Texas, I still think.
Oh, here she is. She's really on this Texas trip.
Yeah, I'm telling you. And I'm telling you, Alabama's going to beat Michigan.
We had a listener.
We got lunch on it, I think.
We had a listener actually correct me on when we were talking earlier about Texas' coach, Rick Barnes. Billy Turgeon, who I graduated with, did point out Rick Barnes has 860 career wins. Wow. Thank you, Billy, by the way, for that.
That seems like a lot.
300,
I was way. Thanks, John.
Wow.
I wasn't going to bring that part up.
That's what I was going to.
I like my view from under the bus.
It says we're wrapping up here in the last few minutes of the show. How about any predictions for the opening season tomorrow?
Interesting. I don't think Hunter brought this up, but the starting pitcher for the White Sox was a former Brewer.
Yes.
He was a Rule 5 draft pick.
He was drafted the year before the starter.
I'm sure that's not by accident. They're giving him the ball in Milwaukee on opening day.
Definitely.
Well, you know, I think the White Sox were the worst team in baseball last year.
Well, and we stole Andrew Vaughn from them.
Yeah.
So. It really was. I mean, I think there's an investigation on that.
He performed like a totally different person when he got to Milwaukee.
Yeah.
So it's got to be. I'm going to go out on a limb and say Milwaukee.
It's got to be better than last year. I think we got swept by the
really spent most of the show out on the limb this today.
It's a really big limb. Well, really big limb.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I hate to say this, but I agree with Keith. I like the Brewers.
So you're jumping on the bandwagon, John.
I'm going to go the Brewers 6-1. I'll give a score even.
Ooh.
Okay.
Well, I didn't know we were giving scores.
Well, it's a free country.
Yeah, what do you think there, Hans?
The Miz is on the mound.
Yeah.
Start. Just to beat Matt, I'm going to go 7-2.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to go 4-2.
Ooh, tight game.
It'll be a little bit, like, a little bit of a tighter game. I just think, you know, it takes, even with spring training, it takes a little bit for the bats to get warmed up.
That's how I say 3-1.
Okay.
Well, 3-1.
Pat Murphy cannot be happy with Mizorowski being on, what's the kicker from the Colts show?
McAfee.
Oh, yeah.
He was on the Pat McAfee
show. I saw that.
Talking about he can hit 104 miles an hour.
Yep,
I'm sure
that.
Murphy's not thrilled with that at all.
let's see it.
Yeah.
did you see the top prospect just flunk out of spring training out in the outfield? That poor kid that had all the chains on.
Oh, no.
No,
I felt he was the top prospect coming into spring training. Oh. Yeah, the outfielder.
For the Brewers?
Out in left field, left fielder.
Connor Griffin for the Pirates, maybe?
Maybe, and he came out with all these diamond chains on and everything, and he, like, epically failed to the point where they moved him. They're moving him back down. Yeah. So it was a perfect learning lesson for my son when I showed him that, you know, having a little bit of humility is worth a million. Speaking of that, do we sit Giannis for the rest of the season?
I don't know. I don't think he's going to do it. I mean, short of he's that kind of guy that's like, I'm here to play basketball. I'm here to do my best, and I don't know that they're going to be able to make him sit down, honestly.
He said no. And
I don't think so.
They missed their window.
Yeah.
I agree.
They missed their window of trading him while he was in.
Because
these injuries are not helping. 31 years old doesn't sound old, but he's played a long time.
Well, I don't know. Ask LeBron James. I don't know.
Do we need to keep him to go anywhere?
Well, it's or almost to the point now where they're constantly talking about it. So then it's just going to follow season after season if he gets hurt or if they're not winning. You know, we got to get rid of him.
Well, these injuries aren't helping his stock.
No, they're not.
His stock, right? So, I mean, at some point there's going to be a point of no return, I think, where they can't get enough to justify getting rid of him, right? And so then you're like, well, we're going to stick with him. Or this last hurrah of trying to get as much as you can for him.
Build a team around him and then go for one more run, but I don't know.
Load up on the draft picks and start over.
Yep.
John, Keith, Matt, want to thank you all for making my celebrity debut smooth.
You did good.
And that wraps it up for the Sports Q here on 92.5 WJJQ. Coming up next is your CBS National News Update.